Hello, and welcome to another episode of Turkey Book Talk. I'm William Armstrong, speaking to you from here in Istanbul. Thanks again for tuning in. In this podcast, we hear from authors of newly released books on Turkey and the region. Subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, or Acast. Like the Facebook page, follow the Twitter account at Turkey Book Talk. Check out show notes and links at armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com and rate or review the podcast on whatever platform you listen on. Remember to consider joining as a member to help support Turkey Book Talk. Paying members get access to a range of extra things, including transcripts in both English and Turkish of every interview published on Turkey Book Talk in PDF form as soon as the episode is published. Members also receive transcripts of the entire Turkey Book Talk archive, which so far amounts to well over 70 conversations. And the archive also includes a number of interviews not previously published on the podcast. And members also get access to a very nice 30% discount on Turkey Ottoman history books published by IB Taurus. IB Taurus have a terrific archive of titles, and they've made over 200 books from their Turkey Ottoman history series, both academic and general interest, available at cut price, exclusive to Turkey Book Talk members, through a special discount code. Once again, the book we discuss in this episode is actually included in the deal, so sign up as a member to dig a bit deeper. If you do become a member, you'll have my sincere gratitude, and you'll be helping us to develop the podcast. So to become a member, just pledge a minimum of $3 per episode via Turkey Book Talk's official Patreon account, which you can find a link to at armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com, or by doing a quick Google search, or by looking at any of the other podcast pages. At present, we post new episodes every 2 weeks, so the monthly membership price is no more than $6. Of course, if you're feeling particularly generous and want to pledge more, then you'll certainly be more than welcome, but so long as you pledge $3 or above per episode, membership is entirely at your own discretion. Members only get charged when a new episode is published, so there are no prior commitments or strings attached. You'll be free to sign off whenever you want. And if you're not sure about it for yourself, why not sign up for a friend or colleague who may be interested? The archive now amounts to over 200,000 words, and it's expanding every couple of weeks, so it's certainly not a bad deal. But now on with our latest episode. In it, we hear from Sinan Yildirimaz of Istanbul University, the author of Politics and the Peasantry in Postwar Turkey, which, as I mentioned, is published by IB Taurus. The book examines the period after the Second World War, when Turkey transitioned to a multi-party system and when a wave of migration from rural to urban areas started to occur, reshaping the country's political and social fabric. The official early republican ideology of Kemalism was devised in major urban centres, but when the Republic of Turkey was founded in 1923, a vast majority of the population still lived in rural areas and literacy levels were still very low. The early republic wanted to maintain a controlled division between city and village, but for a number of complex reasons, a steady stream of people started to migrate from rural to urban areas after the Second World War. Later on in the conversation, we discuss the causes behind this migration, which still shapes many aspects of Turkey today, as well as how it affected society, culture, and politics in the country. But I started by asking Sinan Yildirimaz to talk about how the early republican authorities approached Turkey's majority peasant and non-urban population.
Okay, before the publication of my book, the title of my study reflects the perspective of the 1920s or the Kemalist ideology. I gave the title From Imaginary to Real. The peasantry in Kemalist perspective was not a real entity. It was something imagined. It was the core of the nation. The core of the nation lays in the peasantry for the Kemalist ideology. They define peasantry as the unchanged core or the root of Turkishness. So they tried to go to the villages to explore that root in order to say who is a Turk. So in the definition of the nationalism for Kemalism, everything was very much abstract. But after the Second World War, with the effect of the Mulich Institute regimes or the multi-party period, when the votes of the average man, average citizens in the country became important, the peasantry became more concrete than ever. It became a real subject, not an imaginary ideal, but something more concrete, more real, that you need to understand what they need, what they want, what are they. So the perspective when I wrote this book was to understand this transformation, what happened in Turkey during those years in the name of peasantry, and made the peasants not an imaginary entity, but a real one.
Now, there's this concept of peasantism, and this was like a branch of the official ideology, really. And this idea also kind of went hand in hand with the urbanization policies of the single party regime, which basically depended on the separation of the urban and rural spheres. So peasants or non-urban populations were encouraged to just remain in their villages in order to kind of avoid differentiation and conflict between the classes. So there were these projects, you know, you mentioned there the village institutes, and there was also the people's houses. And these were these different institutions that were there to kind of set up in non-urban areas to kind of try and spread the message of the Kemalist regime, really. And they were also part of this broader ideological perspective, which tried to spread development to villages or to non-urban areas and therefore be able to keep people living in the same place. So they wouldn't move to the major cities, they'd stay in their villages and they'd develop them in that way. So it was based on this kind of quite rigid division, really, between the village and the city. But these plans was obviously complicated in the years ahead amid this kind of wave of migration from villages to towns and cities across Turkey, pretty much starting in the 1940s, really. I'll ask you about the effects of that migration later, but firstly, just talk about the kind of both the domestic political shifts and also the international developments that prompted this migration. What were the main factors behind this urban migration that took place?
That kind of movements is as a result of a complicated mixture of problems occurred in the countryside. So there were some specific developments in the countryside occurred after the 1940s, after the Second World War. Because after the Second World War, Turkey left the economic policies which were followed in the single party period. During the single party period, the state, the Republican regime followed a statist regime in which all investments and economic controls were made by the public authorities. So this perspective would be changed after the Second World War, because at the end of the Second World War, the so-called free world won the war. So the liberal ideas or liberalism as a result were championed. So the foundation of the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and that kind of trade relations, which will be with the GATT, all try to reshape the economic aura, economic space of the world after the Second World War. So Turkey will take part in that economic atmosphere as a liberal country, which would go hand in hand with the new ideological perspective created in the world after the Second World War. So the change in the economic preferences reached us, the change in the agricultural perspective, which will affect the peasantry in the countryside. And this change, firstly, occurred in the definition of Turkish place in the world economy. The Republican regime want to be a champion in the heavy industry, like in steel. And that kind of heavy industrial base were funded during the first Republican period. But in the period after the Second World War, the focus on agricultural production became very much in the leader of the economic policies, because the place of Turkey in world economic order was defined as to be the grain stock of European regeneration. The re-establishment of the European countries after the Second World War would be supported by Turkey in agricultural terms. This was the role given to Turkey after the Second World War. So agricultural production would be increased. This will also affect the peasantry. In the newspapers of the period, when they asked to the ordinary peasants in the 1950s, they were all saying that after the passing to the multi-party regime, after the Democrat Party government, we became very much richer, wealthier than before. However, the historiography written after the 1960s did not see those peasants, because the perspective of the people who wrote the period's history after 1960s saw only the oppression coming from the government. And this oppression was mostly directed to the middle class urban resident people. And the peasants, who were the majority in the country, were happy about their developing situation. And we can witness the same situation in today's Turkey. Many people saw the oppression coming from the government. However, many people who saw themselves relatively wealthier than before saw the government in power good and gave their support. So in many ways, the 1950s also resemble today's Turkey. The populist mentality of the government, the economic preferences of the government, also the anti-communist, anti-oppositional, oppressive mentality of the government can also be compared to today's government.
So the post-Second World War period kind of saw Turkey, as you mentioned, integrate really into the Western alliance and NATO. And Turkey's position in the US's Marshall Plan gave it a specific role in the reconstruction of Europe, part of this new and widespread development program that was put forward as an alternative to Soviet communist development plans. And Turkey had a very specific position in this international division of labor, and this prompted it to embark on a much more agriculture-based economic development strategy. So it meant the kind of abandonment of statist industrial development pursued up to that point. A new network of highways were constructed. They were constructed to carry agricultural products to the market more efficiently, and they were kind of built in place of railroads that had been prioritized by the previous regime. But also, those roads led to more villagers moving to the cities, and there was this sense that mechanization of agricultural production kind of changed Turkey's rural structure, reduced labor needs. And villages brought villagers closer to the market through kind of easier transportation through those roads. And this kind of led to this new wave of migration. And traditionally, this wave of migration has been seen really as almost exclusively a result of Turkey's position in the Marshall Plan. But your book complicates that narrative a bit. And you argue that urbanization was actually largely encouraged, not just by those things, but also by other factors. And they include kind of rapid population increases in rural families, which was kind of spurred by early Republican development, and particularly like better healthcare, relative kind of stability after the chaos of the first couple of decades of the 20th century, and also Turkey's neutrality during World War II. And you also make the point that most of the urban migration that actually took place came from the Black Sea region, which was largely untouched by the Marshall Plan, actually, as well as from the kind of poorest Anatolian villages where landless sharecroppers were not affected by the new machinery that was brought in as part of this new agricultural plan. But regardless of the causes of the migration, it's certainly undeniable that migration from rural to urban areas had a massive effect on all aspects of urban life, all aspects really of life in Turkey. I mean, the politics was hugely affected in different ways in the decades going forward. But specifically talking about the kind of culture of cities, the kind of culture of migrants was not transformed by the cities that they moved to. In fact, the opposite was generally the case, with cities undergoing a kind of ruralization in a way. And you write in the book that, quote, the New Republic tried to create a new urban culture, but before the creation of this new urban culture was concluded, change in economic and political preferences caused a rapid rural migration movement. And this kind of complicated the kind of more simple early Republican plan of dividing the urban and rural areas, and really affected life in cities. And there was all kinds of symptoms of this, you know, gece kondus, or effectively slum housing, mushroomed on urban peripheries. Social mores became more conservative, and actually I was surprised to read that apparently this is when dolmushes or shared taxes first emerged, because they were kind of filling in the gaps. All these things were kind of filling in the gaps that where, you know, kind of municipal services didn't exist yet. So there were places where gece kondus were springing up and there was no electricity, there was no water, and these new migrants had to kind of do it all themselves and build the infrastructure from scratch. But basically this whole process meant that kind of a bourgeois city culture that the early Republican regime tried to cultivate was kind of curtailed before it could really develop. So just talk a bit about this aspect, how this migration affected urban culture, and how that also shaped political preferences and really is one of the big dividing lines that are still really with us today, the legacy of that divide. We still kind of, you can still recognize a division between the kind of new urban residents and the old kind of traditional city dwellers. It's still quite a potent divide in Turkish culture and Turkish politics, actually.
Yeah, when an average reading Kemalist, intellectual Kemalist in Turkey, they would say that the transition to multi-party system in Turkey was very much early, because the Republican regime could not create a kind of totalizing or a kind of unifying identity. So it could not reach to the villages, to all people. It could not give the identity which was desired by the Kemalist regime, because the things happened after the Second World War changed everything. The occurrence of a war after the first one obstructed the development of Kemalist modernization process, because they were thinking that they could create a kind of new identity, new citizenship, new culture in cities, in villages, in every way of life. But before concluding that creation of a new nationalist sense to all people, the transition to multi-party system occurred. In a way, this was right, because there was not much strong city culture created in the Kemalist period. There was a strong culture of city, urban culture in the Ottoman period. Ottoman Empire is not a culture of villages or agricultural production. This is a culture of cities. It is an urban-based empire, as in all empires. However, it was a multinational empire. So the cities were composed of very different ethnic groups. However, when you transform the empire to a nation state, many minorities or many urban residents need to be ousted from the country. This was the need for the unifying homogenization perspective of the nation state founders. They try to create a new homogenizing identity around a kind of ethnic identity. So the people who are not accepted in those identity needs to be ousted from the country. So the Armenians in 1915, the Greeks in 1924, and in the following years, 1930s, the Jews ousted from the Thracian region. These people, the Armenians, the Rums, etc., were the main strong creator of the urban culture in the Ottoman times. So when it comes to the first years of the Republic, there was not much people who can support the cultural aura, cultural atmosphere of the cities. So when the transformation of the agriculture occurred after the Second World War, the newcomers, new immigrants coming from the villages would face a not much strong city culture. Ideally, city culture is accepted as a very strong culture, which will eliminate all other minor cultures in itself. People would adapt to the higher culture, to the city culture. But if the city culture was not that much strong, it would be changed consequently. So this was the situation in Turkey. The village culture, the culture of the new immigrants, changed the city atmosphere. Not only culture, but the geographical definition of city would be changed with the foundation of Gecekondus. Because in the previous times, the city was defined in a very limited form. But the limits of city would be increased with the foundation of these new areas of Gecekondus. So we can say that the politicians tried to get the support of those newcomers, new residents, to get the power. They needed them. They became the core of the cities after the 1950s. When it comes to the 60s and 70s, the core of city politics would go around those new residents, new culture, like the foundation of new music, foundation of arabesque, and that kind of new sounds will change the city atmosphere. So this is how the things changed.
And of course, crucially, these changes coincided really with the shift from the single party period to the multi-party era. So the first free election really took place in 1950. And this meant that the preferences of a still overwhelmingly peasant origin population suddenly became very important indeed. So before, you know, the opinions of this kind of population really were kind of not really focused on that much. But suddenly they had to be appealed to. They were seen as important voter blocks. And indeed, they made up the majority of the population. Just talk about this aspect and the way that the Democrat Party, led by Adnan Menderes, which won the 1950 general election, kind of appealed to peasants and also voters who had started migrating to the urban periphery.
During the 1950s in Turkey, the majority of the Turkish population were peasant. So in a competitive multi-party system, any party should create their political perspective to gain the support of the peasants. They need the peasants to get the power. This was a very hard thing for politicians of the RPP because they were all bureaucrats. They were members of parliament from the regions which they even did not go one time. This situation changed in 1950. The new party in power came to power with the support of the people. This was a very revolutionary thing for Turkey. It was the first time in Turkey, and the DP would be overthrown from the government, not with the elections, but with the coup d'etat, with the military intervention again in 1960. So this was very important for Turkish political culture, and all people who lived those years remembered that transformation. In Turkey, ordinary people pay more attention to the elections, even today. They define the elections as the core of the politics, not in wider terms, like politics in the street, politics in the class, politics in everyday life. They define politics only in terms of elections. This was the situation created also in the 1950s. The people, for the first time in Turkish history, changed the government in power. So they thought that elections are a very important tool to make the governors, make the bureaucrats, or make the leaders hear their voices. They could change the regime. They could change the parties in power with their votes. So the importance of the peasantry also comes from that. The majority of Turkey, like 80% of Turkey, was living in the countryside during those years. And in the following years, this percentage will decrease. However, the importance of peasant culture or peasantry would not get lost, because peasant culture or the new culture created in the urban sites would be the main factor in politics afterwards. This would affect the main core political situation in Turkey also, because when it comes to support to a party, the working class or the new urban classes in Turkey would support right-wing parties mostly. So the urban classes in Turkey would not consist of mostly like middle classes or working classes, but some kind of peasant workers, who was the creation of the agricultural transformation in the 1950s. This would affect the political situation also, political preferences, political tactics. This will all affect the situation in the coming years.
And finally, one of the things that I don't think is widely enough recognized, really, is that urbanization really is central to the kind of origins, actually, of political Islam in Turkey. Really, it's possible to see Islamism as a kind of generational phenomenon, really, that was kind of rooted among migrant or urban migrant communities on the kind of urban periphery in the 1970s, really, and, you know, flourishing after the 1980s and in the coming years. And, you know, that was really, it's very, the roots of this are very complicated, but it's a combination of things. And there was a kind of lack of urban services, and these kind of groups, these religiously motivated groups, often provided services to kind of precarious communities and neighborhoods, you know, things, as we mentioned before, like electricity, water services, housing, that the state was kind of scrambling and late to catch up with. These kind of organized political Islamist grassroots groups started providing those services, and that's really how they built up from the grassroots, really, in the 1970s and 80s and onwards. Just to conclude, I wonder if you could just kind of reflect on this kind of crucial, sometimes overlooked aspect of urbanization, how the roots really of political Islam and the precursors of today's AKP really did have their roots based in the urban migrant communities on the urban periphery.
When we talk on the 1950s, we cannot talk that much on the Islamization or the kind of anti-secular movements, because the political legacy of Kemalism was rooted in the cities in those sense. There was a semi-religious, mostly nationalistic party. The name was the Nations Party, a Millet Partisi, created with the separation from the DP in the early period. Also, there was another party which can be labeled as semi-religious, semi-Islamist, and mostly religious, and mostly nationalist, similar to Nations Party, which was the Peasants Party, Köylü Partisi. They would combine their existence in the later years, and in the 60s, they would change their name to MHP. The MHP, the Nationalist Party of Turkey, which supports AKP government today. So the creation of the Gecekondus and the limited urban base, which would be a core for Islamist development in the 1970s and 80s, would also be created in those years. Also in the 60s and 70s, mostly in the 70s, leftist groups would use that the Gecekondu settlements would be the main areas which would be the leftist groups' main target or main political activity centers. Not the Islamists, but the leftist groups. However, with the 1980 coup, military intervention, when the leftist groups were all oppressed by the government powers, these new Islamist groups would find a way to fill the gap which would be emptied by the leftist groups in the 1970s. So we can say that the infrastructure, the loss in the infrastructure, the uneasy development and conditional development starting from the 1950s would create a base for Islamist groups to spread their ideology or effect in society. Yes, in today's world, they are the core areas for the Islamists. However, this was as a result of the military intervention in 1980. It would not be if the military intervention did not obstruct the leftist groups in those regions. This was not the automatic result of the underdevelopment of the urban residents, but the militaristic intervention to the leftist politics starting from the late 1970s, even continuing in today's politics.
That was Sinan Yildirimaz. Many thanks to him. His book, Politics and the Peasantry in Postwar Turkey, was actually one of the last reviews I wrote for Hurriyet Daily News before leaving, so go to armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com to find a link to that review. Also, remember you can actually purchase the book we were discussing with a generous 30% discount if you sign up as a Turkey Book Talk member. To become a member, just pledge a minimum of $3 per episode via Turkey Book Talk's official Patreon account, along with access to that 30% discount on over 200 books on Turkey and Ottoman history, published by IB Taurus. Membership also gives you access to transcripts in English and Turkish of every episode as it's published, as well as the entire Turkey Book Talk archive of well over 70 conversations so far. Find links to that Patreon account in order to sign up via all the Turkey Book Talk websites, and if you're not personally sure, then why not consider just signing up as a gift for a friend or colleague. Also, do please rate or review Turkey Book Talk on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you use. You can follow via Twitter or like the Facebook page to stay fully updated with new episodes, and you can send any recommendations, feedback or abuse to williamjohnarmstrong@gmail.com. But until the next episode of Turkey Book Talk in a couple of weeks, thank you very much for listening.